Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Whoop, whoop. Good Wednesday morning to everybody that is out there. And you guys tell me that nobody likes to apologize, right? Because it means you got something wrong in the first place. Nobody likes it, but there's a good way to do it and a bad way to do it. And then there's whatever the hell Mike Gundy tried to do yesterday. He tried to fix what he created by wearing an OAN t-shirt online, got called out by one of his players, and Mike Gundy did not get it right, because here we are a couple of days later and we're still talking about it.
Yeah, Mike Gundy, his haircut and that voice and that look and all was all wrong. And I think when you look at it, you know, his apology the first time around was just, I don't even know what that was. And then the second time around, you kind of look at it as disingenuous, because so much heat has come down in 24 hours that the only thing he could do was try and clean up the first mistake. And by cleaning up the first mistake, you double down and made a second mistake that doesn't look good. I think the only thing left to do is for the school, the university, the president of the university athletic department to start looking for a replacement before the season start, because I'm sure that the players, you know, without saying, I'm sure that they looking at it sideways as well and saying to themselves, man, we really don't want to play for this dude. They probably haven't come out publicly and said it just yet, but that's something that's going to be coming real soon. You could just tell. You could tell from Feinbaum's comments. You could tell how the national media is responding to his so-called apologies.
He's not even worth keeping, Key.
No, that's why I said
he's not even worth fighting for. He has no real success that you want to dig your heels in. Like Dabo Sweeney.
He's not Dabo, right.
I could see you saying, you know what, that N-word thing ain't right, but damn, we got these chips. He's not even the king of Oklahoma. Like, why are you digging in your heels to protect that dude? If anything, you should be grateful he's giving you one more reason to fire him for due cause, and maybe now you have to pay him one red cent when you do it.
Like, well,
he's not worth it.
The answer is the most obvious thing, right? It's because they're okay with it. That's why. Because they don't have they have a problem with the PR mess they have on their hands right now. But they have a problem with the fact that everybody's looking at them saying, okay, what are you going to do about it? They don't like that, but maybe they don't have a problem with the content of what it is that he was doing. Let's listen to Mike Gundy's apology yesterday. And you guys tell me if this sounds like somebody who is sincere and realizes that they've made a grave mistake.
Once I learned how that network felt about Black Lives Matter, I was disgusted and knew it was completely unacceptable to me. I want to apologize to all members of our team, former players, and their families for the pain and discomfort that has been caused over the last 2 days.
Okay. You laugh, but he just, okay. Once I learned about the Black Lives Matter, I'm just like, oh, Jesus. It just doesn't even sound right coming out his mouth. Well, you know, it's a lot of hesitation and uncomfortable. Just like, geez.
That's it. The hesitation, the uncomfortable. Look, maybe Drew Brees is just a better actor, and I'm not excusing any of the stuff that Drew Brees did to get the reaction that he did. But when he finally did attempt a sincere apology, it sounded sincere to me. It sounded sincere,
well,
whether or not it would be
sincere. I think the difference between Drew in Gundy, Drew really felt, this is going in a different direction for me. I didn't realize that this was getting ready to happen. Mike Gundy doesn't really give a damn. Like, he doesn't give a damn. And you could tell by the fact that he wore a shirt, took a photo in it that I'm assuming he knew was going to be posted online. Whether he knew it or not, you wore that shirt.
He had it on.
And you have aligned yourself with this particular outlet for whatever reasons. But Drew Brees, on the flip side, I don't think Drew Brees really understood the backlash that he was getting, because Drew Brees did not try to provoke the situation. I believe Mike Gundy is poking fun and trying to provoke the situation, but didn't realize that he was going to get the backlash. Drew Brees made a mistake by aligning himself with something that had nothing to do with the military and the flag based on believing other people. That's the way I looked at Drew's versus this.
Paul Feinbaum yesterday, who was on Get Up, he's going to join us coming up at 9:15 later on this morning. So we'll have him on to talk about this directly. But I want you to hear what Feinbaum said, because it feels like what you were saying a second ago, LZ, like what exactly are we waiting for? Here's Paul Feinbaum.
What I can't understand is why Mike Gundy has been allowed to continue to coach at Oklahoma State. This is not his first rodeo. This is not the first time he has embarrassed, if not humiliated, that university. And I think the sooner that Oklahoma State gets rid of Mike Gundy, the better it's going to be for that school, and especially the players who go out there every Saturday and give their blood, sweat, and tears for that university.
Yeah, he's not worth it. He's not worth fighting for. He's not worth an AD and a president going to bat for. I just looked at his coaching record. He hasn't won the Big 12 in 10 years. The last 2 years, he's had like 6 or 7 losses in the season. He's got an abysmal record against Oklahoma. You haven't been talked about as being any sort of champion like in over 10 years. Why are you going to bat for this dude that's done nothing but embarrass you? And let's set aside the T-shirt incident. Let's set that aside. Just in April, as we're grappling with the coronavirus epidemic, he said some really crazy off-the-wall things that basically said he didn't give a damn about the safety of his players. That just happened this year. That's in addition to the fact that we've now learned that several Black players have said things that he has done and said racist things, including, I'm going to send you back to the hood if you don't play well. Like, this is all before the T-shirt. He's not winning important games. He's embarrassing you every other stop. I get it. He's from Oklahoma. He's always been part of the program, like, since the 80s. I get all of that. But you know what?
This is a brand new day.
This is a brand new day. And you know what else happened in the 80s? Parachute pants and jerry curls. We've moved on from that. They should be able to move on from you.
And I think as the momentum continues to build, they will do that. I said it yesterday, much like Paul and you were saying, LZ, I said it on our show. The guy, you know, you can win 8 or 9 games and keep your job in Oklahoma State is fine. I don't think he's been to a Power 5 major bowl in Lord knows how long. He's just, for whatever reason, they're satisfied with the type of product that he's putting out on the field. The type of players that he's putting out there. I don't know. What was the highest draft pick that they've had? What was that, like Dez Bryant or somebody? I mean, like, they don't even get people drafted high.
They're a certain type of program, though, right? Let's be honest. That Oklahoma State is not Oklahoma. That if you're at Oklahoma, you have to win the Big 12. You have to go compete
Oklahoma
for
State
national
was rolling with Jimmy Johnson.
That's 30 years ago. That it just doesn't happen very often. That this is a program that is a middle-of-the-road program, and winning 8 or 9 games a year at Oklahoma State is good enough for them. And so the reason I say this is because I don't think that Oklahoma State is – or I should say the administration at Oklahoma State is frustrated with the winning and losing. They know what they are. They are somewhere below Oklahoma and Texas and somewhere above Iowa State and Baylor. They live in that middle ground in that conference, and that's where they pretty much stayed. But when you think about this dude, when you think about Mike Gundy specifically, and this is just off the top of my head, but here are some of the things that you think of when you think of Mike Gundy. You think of that ridiculous put on of the I'm a man, I'm 40 thing from years ago that was clearly locked and loaded, that there was a piece of performance art that was stupid and ridiculous and got him on TV. And everybody
I'm a man,
laughed
I'm 40.
That's the first thing you think of up until a couple of days ago when you think of Mike Gundy. You think of the comments that you just mentioned a second ago, LZ, about I'm going to send you back to the hood if you don't play well. You think about the comments from a couple of months ago about the pandemic, and his response was, well, all of my guys are young. What's the big deal? Let's bring them in and let's get going. They're young. They're healthy. They'll be okay. A complete disregard for not just the safety of his own players, but for public safety in general. And now this, the winning, his record for Oklahoma State. If you are an Oklahoma State football coach and you win 8 or 9 games a year, you get to stay as long as you want. They're not going to run you out of town because that's good enough for Oklahoma State. Every once in a while you win 10, you're King Kong in that building. But if you do all of this, now you got to go. It's all the nonsense, all the stupid stuff, and the eyes of the world have looked at Oklahoma State. The tone of this country has changed dramatically in the last several weeks, and it's, what are you going to do? They're going to fire him if they're going to fire him because of this. They're not going to do it because he didn't win games. They're winning enough games for Oklahoma State.
No, they are, but at the same time, I think that they've got to get with the times and get real. Okay, when you may not have the aspirations and the goals to feel like you're going to win it all and Final Four and all those other things, you may not have that feeling. But when you have a coach that's consistently embarrassing your program and consistently turning things off, because in a minute, though, what you're getting ready to do is you're getting ready to lose a lot of them black recruits and the black players, because the black parents aren't going to have it. And that's the reality of it. And if you think that you're going to line up and you struggle against Oklahoma with what you have now, imagine when you don't have some of them, what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, if they want to get it right, they got to part ways with him.
They need to part ways with him. And the reason why I kept bringing up his coaching record is because I'm trying to find a reason other than you are just a racist campus and you don't care why you wouldn't just go ahead and dismiss him and get that headache off your shoulders. Get that off your plate. Again, Clemson's situation is awful. It's awful. But you can get it. You understand it. It's about winning football games. If it's clearly not about winning football games in Oklahoma State, then what are you fighting for? Just to prove that you won't have to bend to the pressure of stupid liberals? Like, is that what you want to do? You want to dig in? And you want to dig in and fight for that dude?
Yes.
For that dude and that record just to thumb your nose at a movement that's happening globally?
Well, if that's the case, they should have never released a statement. The president and the AD shouldn't have said anything if that was the case.
Well, their concern, what did they characterize it as? It's gravely concerning. That's how they characterized it from the beginning. Because go back a couple of days. His first attempt at apology was, in light of today's tweet with the T-shirt that I was wearing, I met with some players and realized it's a very sensitive issue with what's going on in today's society. And so we had a great meeting. I was made aware of some things that players feel like can make our organization, our culture, even better than it is here at Oklahoma State. I look forward to making some changes, and it starts at the top with me, and we've got good days ahead. That's nonsense. It's gibberish. It's
gibberish.
Gibberish, because the only thing that makes sense, and it's bad, is I met with some players and realized it's a very sensitive issue with what's going on in today's society. It's not a very sensitive issue. It's an easy issue. You're either on the right side of it or the wrong side of it. There isn't nuance to this. This isn't a yap, but this isn't a, hey, there are some good points over here too. No, this is not nuanced and complicated and lots of different shades of gray. You either understand what's going on or you are willfully willing to move on to other things because you don't care what's going on. Those are your two options, and that's the option that he chooses. This isn't complex and sensitive. It's easy. Do you want to be on the right side of this or the wrong side of this? And your T-shirt tells me you want to be on the wrong side of it, not because it's complicated and sensitive, but because you don't give a damn.
Right. And on top of that, here's your campus issuing these vacuous statements, and you can't help but wonder what this is going to have for them academically. You know, I know that we're focusing on the football program, and football is the reason why a lot of people even know these universities exist, that in the NCAA tournament. But the academic world knows you exist. And if you're the president of Oklahoma State and you've decided you're going to keep this dude, then I'm going to assume you have no plans of going anywhere else as president.
And on top of that, from an academic standpoint, you got other sports as well. You got African American assistant coaches at other sports. So you got to look at all of that if you're the president of the university. You can't just look at the football program. You got to look at the athletic program as a whole. You know, what about those black track athletes, those basketball players? Because if you stand for that, then what are you going to stand for in the other sport? as well as
other
as well as a black student. As I was about to say, as well as on the student body side.
Yes. Your decision not to pull the trigger on this for that dude in this moment is going to have a huge resounding message being sent to every minority on your campus, whether they're a student athlete or not. You don't want to be that president that has to defend keeping him now. You just don't.
Carol Folt.
Very quickly, is Mike Gundy the head coach at Oklahoma State when the season starts? Key?
I don't believe so.
LZ?
No.
I think he is, because if they were going to do it, I think they would have done it by now. Hopefully he's not. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I don't know. All right. Kyrie has a plan, a new plan, a different plan, a bad plan. I'll tell you what it is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right. Major League Baseball still trying to figure out when and where they might play. The pressure has been turned up on Rob Manfred and the owners. Joining us right now to talk about all of this is Doug Glanville, a 9-year Major League veteran, ESPN baseball analyst, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Doug, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. It's a little later on the East Coast here, so you guys are at the crack of dawn, but I got 10:15. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, tell him, Doug. He introduced you, forgot everything to say, except he didn't say the cousin of Jerry Glanville. Long-lost cousin. Long distance, yeah, right?
My brother wrote him a fan mail way back, and he wrote back to Glanville, and he signed it. So we still have it somewhere.
Speaking of signing something, when are we going to get the owners to finally get it together in Major League Baseball and stop trying to pull the wool over the players' eyes? The players have said when and where. Now let's get it done. When is that finally going to happen?
Well, they're kind of backed themselves into a corner now, so they're going to have to make a move. And they know the numbers. You know, the owners have been looking more at the bottom line. They want to know how much they're going to outlay, and they clearly have some sense of what that's supposed to be, because of each game that they play, they're not making as much money because so much of their revenue comes through the gates and dependent on fans. And if you're not going to have fans, then you're not going to make the money you're expecting to make. So there's an incentive to play less to a certain degree, but the players are looking at the structure. They're saying, okay, we have a history. They're going to reject salary caps or discounts out of hand because they're afraid of the precedent and they know that will be used against them at some point. So they're looking at it saying, well, you know, it's prorated and they're going to hold firm to that. So they're just waiting. And that might be 54 games as opposed to 80. The owners can make that kind of proposal and work from there.
Where did it all go wrong for the players and the owners in terms of their relationship and the trust? You know, was there one incident, one scandal in particular, the collusion, you know, maybe back in the 80s? Like, what happened?
I mean, this is the historical relationship, day one. I mean, Marvin Miller came in as, you know, sort of leading this charge of executive director for the Players Association and pretty much won every fight and every ring against the owners, whether it was through court order or injunctions or, you know, battling and enduring through strikes and lockouts. And so the history of baseball has been led through labor disputes. And it's interesting to note that the last 25 years, baseball has had peace. You know, there's been no stoppage. And ironically, now we're facing the worst crisis you can imagine, and they're not getting it done. And it seems very backwards. But that is the lesson. The players have generally sort of outlasted and been able to sort of maintain that solidarity. And players, you know, generations before when I played in sort of the mid-90s to mid-2000s, before me, they were making tremendous sacrifices by setting the stage. So when you're a player, you get indoctrinated into this idea that, you know, you have to protect the past, but you also have to protect the future. You're always in that middle ground of preserving that past and preserving the future. And you feel a responsibility because the people who went on strike and all that had a lot less than you did. And the people going forward, you want to set up something going forward. So there's a different kind of motivation and solidarity that doesn't span just in your era, but across all time through players.
Doug Glanville joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. Doug, like you mentioned, it's been the better part of 25 years. It's been labor peace in baseball, but we all know about 1994. You go back to 1981, there was a work stoppage in the middle of the season as well. And every time that these issues come up, it feels like the baseball fans, sports fans, turn against the players, the air quotes greedy players who won't play a kid's game for X amount of dollars. Does it feel different this time? Because the message of tell us when and where seems to be resonating with fans, that they get the idea of, look, we're willing to go. They're the ones that are holding us up on the ownership side. Does it feel different this time as far as public perception?
It does. It feels different. I mean, there's certainly, you know, your share of criticism. And look, it's fair to have that criticism. We're facing unemployment. We're in a health crisis. I think they understand that they need to stand up to that and recognize that, you know, we're all in a crisis right now. But at the same time that, you know that the history will turn into sort of billionaires versus millionaires. And their focus remains on the structural components of what they're trying to move forward on, you know, in terms of the economics. And, you know, when we're in a health crisis, that also gives a little bit of sense of this is non-essential. Okay, baseball is non-essential. And you're asking players to go out and play, you know, for profit, and you're taking certain health risks with a lot of uncertainty. And the players make, you know, the argument like, well, we're going to do this. And it is to a certain degree discounted because you're getting prorated. Mike Trout's not going to make his, you know, whatever, $25 million. He's going to make half of that if he plays half the amount of games. So there is some level of you're not paying my full contract. You are playing some discount because we're not, you know, getting the 162 games that was part of my understanding of what we would be doing. So the circumstances are weighing, and people understand, well, I'm a little hesitant to play, and I want to make sure that everything is as tight as possible. So the health crisis has made a big difference in that perception.
Could the players lose focus, though, on the health part of it and focusing too much in on the money part with the owners and not protecting themselves?
Like, I think that's what sometimes will come off poorly. If you're not constantly reminding everyone where we are. Now, keep in mind, generally, if you go back to history, the Players Association did not spend a lot of time trying to litigate these issues in the public space because generally they wouldn't win. In some cases, media empires own teams. It wasn't a place like, for example, Don Fehr, Michael Wiener tried to fight because it was difficult to win that. They've tried to fight in the court of public opinion on a certain level through the actual courts. You know, they fought by educating constituents, constantly talking. Now, it's harder now with social media because information gets out there. Every player can be like, I'm just going to tweet this out. So if I was a player rep today like I was when I played, it would be harder to keep that cohesiveness because everybody can get out there and say whatever. It doesn't all flow through the player rep. But what's interesting is, you know, you look at the sign stealing with the Astros, players called out players. And that was a little bit of a watershed moment because you are all constituents in the union, but they took a stand to say, we don't want this. And I think if we did better on the PED level, we might have had a different outcome there, but we were a little bit more cautious about that. So, because you didn't want to call players out directly. So with all that put together, you do have a different time. And players are speaking, and they're speaking out not just in health and safety, but now it's migrated to sort of an inequities and injustices, and union is, you know, union battles are front and center to some of that discussion.
If worst comes to worst, and they're forced to play, you know, 40 some odd games, World Series champions decided in 60 games or less, where do you place the champion of this season? Like, is there an asterisk? Is there a check mark? You think they'll be validated? Like, what happens to that team?
Yeah, we had Dusty Baker on our podcast. I have a podcast with Jason Stark called Starkville. And Dusty Baker joined us, and he said, I am taking that trophy. You know, it's, I'm taking it. So it counts. And, you know, history will continue to debate. That's what's so fun about baseball. We're always looking and comparing eras. But yes, it's an asterisk in a historic concept, but you know, what are you going to do? This is the cards you're dealt and you're trying to make the most of it. If anything, if you're a team that played through a pandemic and with all the health scares and all that, you deserve that trophy or you deserve that trophy. And I know that, you know, although baseball is non-essential, right? It's a sport and it's, you know, fun and we want to be entertained. What I think is essential right now for our country is to be reminded of team. And reminded of the best of what sports can give us. And so that reminder that baseball potentially could have, which I think is right now is the missed opportunity, is to be the only game in town and to keep reminding people of team and a diverse group of people working towards a goal. That is a great reminder we could use right now even if the game itself is not essential, the spirit of it is not.
ESPN MLB analyst Doug Glanville joining us here on the morning show. Doug, you mentioned that you are a player rep. We know the situation that we're in right now, and I don't know how to ask this other than to just, do the owners care at all? Do they care if it's a shortened season? Do they care if there's no season? Do they care about the way that baseball fans feel if this thing goes the way that it might in a canceled season? Do they care at all?
I'd say they care. They care, but they have there's an economic driver certainly as part of the equation that they know that whatever they resolve here could potentially be part of precedent. They know that, and as the players know that. That's why, you know, salary caps, all these things, because they're going to come back to the table in 2021, and it's probably going to be pretty ugly. And we may not even be on the other side of this pandemic, or who knows. So they're aware of it, but history will tell us that they've always had these battles, players and owners, back and forth, and there's a tone deafness or a blindness to what is happening externally. There's a obsession with almost sticking to the negotiations. Like, that's it. I'm negotiating with you across the table. And we did that with the PEDs, and sometimes we're very short-sighted because we're trying to worry about this relationship that if you give an inch, they're going to take a mile. And they both feel that way, so they don't really actually look outside. And you need to look out the window right now at what's happening and recognize that the public discourse is not constructive. People don't want to hear it. And they can be very successful locking themselves in a room, working it out, and come out and say, look, we're together on this, and let's move forward. Because it's not because they signed the contract. The work starts after that, too. Because once you do that, you now have a chance to lead. And it's much more powerful when you both show that you're leading together and not in this sort of battle and I'm standing over here and we're not talking. And that's the complete missed opportunity of baseball really recapturing the spirit of national pastime.
Hey, Doug, real quick before we let you go, you are a historian of baseball, right? Kind of know the league for years past. You do understand Babe Ruth was black too, right? You do know that's a myth that's out there. I say you do understand that Babe Ruth was black. They won't let us know that though out there. They put that little myth that's in the air now, brother Babe.
Yeah, it's like, well, I pointed to the stands, you know, and said this is what's about to happen. Yeah, I mean, and you know, baseball has been challenged with trying to. You know, we see the percentage of African American players, and it's a very diverse sport. You know, it's just the Latin American influence is really ratcheted up, and this is an opportunity for baseball to recognize its history and true history. And I think, you know, one suggestion I have is you have all these incredible analytics departments, right, that are combing every data point under the sun to make the perfect game. Every team is doing this. Well, why not turn and reflect and look internally and look at the sport through that same type of scrutiny along culture and race and really understand it. And maybe you'll see something in the weeds of the hiring practices. Maybe you'll see something that sort of connects the dot in history on why we are having these challenges. Why, you know, I don't know. I mean, you're certainly combing every stone to figure out when you should steal a base. Why don't we figure out how to, you know, use that sort of high-powered analytical capability and look at some patterns and practices that create the disparity that we see in sport. And in sports across the way. I think they have the resources and the cultural capabilities to do something like that.
All right.
Doug, you're so smart and you're so wise. I feel the need to ask you, like, everything. But right now, I have a question for you. I recently bought a hummingbird feeder, but I haven't seen any hummingbirds come to it yet. What am I doing wrong?
Well, it's amazing you say that because my dad, who passed nearly 17 years ago, was from Trinidad and Tobago. And as you know, the bird of the carnival was the hummingbird. So every time I see a hummingbird, I see a sign that, okay, I'm in the right place in the right time. So I really actually appreciate you bringing that up. And I've kind of not done the feeder because I feel like it's an artificial way that I'm like bringing in this sign that I rely on to kind of keep going forward. But one quick story is after my father passed, we played in Houston in an indoor facility at the time. And, My dad was gone, and my brother came to the game, and we saw hummingbirds were floating around the Gatorade cooler. I think it was Powerade cooler. And of all places, right, in a dugout, hummingbirds, during a Major League Baseball game the day my brother came in. So I appreciate that, and I still have no idea how I would feed them, but they actually do mean a lot to me. So thanks for that.
Doug Glanville, 9 years in the major leagues, ESPN MLB analyst. Doug, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You got it. Guys, today is the 26th anniversary of one of the wildest days in the history of sports. I'll explain it next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
So, guys, we've talked about some of our favorite 30 for 30s a bunch of different times on this show. And tonight at 4 o'clock our time, ESPN is replaying June 17th, 1994. Obviously, today is June 17th. So 26 years ago, all of these things happened on the same day. The O.J. Simpson chase, right? Arnold Palmer's final round of the U.S. Open. The United States hosting their first ever World Cup. Game 5 of the 1994 NBA Finals between the Rockets and the Knicks. The Rangers holding a Stanley Cup parade in New York City for their first Stanley Cup in over 50 years. Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 30th home run, tied for the most before the end of June. And this was obviously pre-Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, so we had a home run chase at the same time. That edition of 30 for 30 plays tonight, recapping one of the most bizarre, surreal, exciting, emotional days in the history of sports. I can't recommend it enough.
So they, so what they did then, I didn't see, is this a new 30 for 30? Or
no, no. This is actually one of the originals, Key. This goes way back, and there's no narration. It's all done with natural sound from the moments, from news broadcasts, from B-roll that was taking place during all these events. So there's not somebody telling you what's happening. You're just watching these events happen in what feels like real time. It's fascinating because all of those things, I mean, that's five different things that on any given day would be extraordinary, and they all happened on the same day.
Wow, yeah, I got to tune in for this one. I just pushed the button to record it just in case.
You know, it was so funny because one of the rebroadcast games on NBA TV was Game 5 in 1994. And I hadn't actually seen the rest of the game because of the O.J. Simpson chase. Mm-hmm. It didn't dawn on me until I was actually watching the broadcast that I actually didn't see the fourth quarter. And I had no idea how close it was or how tense it was or who did what. Because once the O.J. Simpson chase started happening, they made the game this really small, tiny box off to the side. And we were focusing on this car race or exhibition more than a race or chase or anything like that. And I just remember just being mad. I was just real mad. I was like, damn it. Everybody knows Game 5 is the most important game in the series. What the hell are y'all doing? Who cares? I was like, they're not even chasing him. They're escorting him to the airport or whatever. They're not even chasing him. I was like, where's Elijah Wan? Where's Robert Horry? Where's Sam Cassell? What the hell?
They were in a very small box in the corner of your screen because the big box was the car chase. And how about this? Speaking of the car chase, Ford, the car manufacturer, is going to unveil its new Bronco. The Bronco has not been made for the better part of 20 years. They stopped production on that particular model, but they're bringing it back, and they're bringing it back on July 9th. And, oh, what day is July 9th? It just happens to be, oh, I don't know, O.J. Simpson's birthday. So well done, Ford. They talk about being slick and clever that they're bringing back the Bronco on the same day as O.J.'s birthday. Yeah. How about that?
Come on, Ford. Come on, Ford.
I don't know if that's good or bad right there.
That's a hell of a coincidence.
I'm going to tell you.
It's a coincidence, guys. Coincidence.
It's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence because every single marketing person that works for a multi-billion dollar conglomerate like Ford knows you check this day in history before you decide to announce anything, just to make sure you don't have moments of embarrassment.
There's a lot going on right now, LZ. There's a lot going on. You know, you got some social justice. You got Gundy's everywhere.
Maybe they think that is going to boost the sales. Maybe they think that, hey, releasing it on his birthday is going to boost the sales.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the thought process might have been going into it. It's just when you think of that particular vehicle, it's the first thing you think of, right? Because it wasn't just the O.J. chase. It was the O.J. Bronco chase. that the word Bronco was always thrown in there when we're talking about that moment
in
history.
Put it this way. At least they didn't release it on the day he was chased.
Well, that would be today. Because that's happened in 1994. So if you get a chance, check it out. June 17th, 1994 is the name of the 30 for 30. And any of those five events, Arnold Palmer is one of the more iconic athletes of the 20th century. He shuts it down. The World Cup kicked off, one of the biggest events in the entire world, sporting events. It's arguably the sporting event for the globe. That kicks off. Stanley Cup, baseball, and OJ running from the highway patrol.
So, Travis, you have one ticket. One ticket. You could be in a police car chasing OJ. You could be at Arnold Palmer's final round, at the NBA Finals, at the parade. Where is your one ticket taking you?
You know what? And this may surprise you a little bit. The one, because of all these things on the list, I've never been part of a police chase, so maybe that's but I've never been to a World Cup game, so I would want to go do that. I've been to the finals. I've been to the Stanley Cup. I've been seeing historic home runs, all of these things. I've been to big-time golf tournaments. I've never been to a World Cup, so I would pick that.
Key?
I want to chase the juice.
Me too. Me too. Oh my God, I was thinking the same thing.
I want to see what's happening. I'd have been to NBA final games and everything else. I don't care about golf enough, and I don't care about soccer like that to, you know, I can go to a soccer match, but it ain't often you're going to be able to chase O.J. Simpson.
No. That's what I was thinking.
We hope
I was
not.
Like, I would totally use my ticket to ride in a police car and chase OJ.
Yeah, I just did. Especially what I know now about him and about them. Oh, yeah, I want to hear what they got to say, what they were saying.
All right, Take It or Shake It is coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Okay, Key, let's start with a little quarterback question for you in Take It or Shake It. The Cleveland Browns are the perfect landing spot for Cam Newton. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Hey, all right. You like that one, huh?
And it's so interesting because Cam Newton was working out with Odell Beckham this past week. And as we know, Cam Newton's a free agent as of March 24th when the Panthers decided to part ways with him. And you look at Baker Mayfield, you look at the rest of the team and the makeup of the new head coach who is not, and a new general manager did not draft him, Baker Mayfield. So when you look at a Cam Newton who's sitting out there and you're sitting there saying to yourself, it's like, man, you know what? That might be the right spot for Cam, because the one thing that might be holding the Cleveland Browns back now that they got rid of Freddie Kitchens might be the quarterback. And if the quarterback has any signs of any type of regress in terms of his progress, then at the same time, you got Cam sitting there. You get Cam about $15 million. Tell him, look, man, you come in, you mentor this kid, you back him up for a short period of time. In the moment that he stubs his toe, we going with you? That might be the move for the Cleveland Browns, to be honest with you. That might be the move.
I'm not saying it's not the right move, and I'm not saying that Cam Newton isn't better than Baker Mayfield, because both of those things are probably true. But you've invested a lot in Baker Mayfield, and the second Cam Newton steps foot on your campus, Baker Mayfield's cooked. It's over for that.
Well, I really haven't invested a lot into him. The organization drafted him. They've gone and done some things over a couple of years.
That's what I mean. The organization spent the number one overall pick on him just a couple of years ago. You're going to move on after 2 years with the number one overall pick?
Yeah, but I may not be moving on. What I may be doing is moving in the right direction. And that means that I got a guy like Cam Newton who's been there, done it, knows how to do it with the players around him and what leadership he does have with a new coach that is excited to coach him up and be a part of it. You get him in there, and then all of a sudden Baker has to sit behind him for a couple years, or you decide to trade Baker somewhere. It's okay. It's fine with that, because what you can afford to do is leave him in there, and now all of a sudden you wasted your season, and he's gotten no better. Now you got to figure out what you're going to do the following year at quarterback.
All right, let's move on to a baseball topic. Let's take a listen to Jeff Passan, who was on Get Up yesterday morning.
if there is some flexibility on the back end, if there are some double headers that are put into play, they can plague somewhere between 70 and 75 games. And at this point, I think owners have to recognize that they are in a position where they need to be the ones who are bringing baseball back, because the players are just sitting here saying, you tell us when, you tell us where, we'll be there. And that is an extraordinarily simple and powerful message.
It is 100% on the owners to bring back baseball. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Oh, take it.
It's on you. It's on you.
The players have stood up, and their voices are being heard by the public now. Finally. The owners are starting to look bad because the players simply said, like Jeff said, when and where? We good. We'll take the deal that we got in March, man. When and where? Now the owners just got to say when and where.
Cuando y donde?
They've got to not only when and where, but they've got to do it sooner than later. Because if they let a couple of weeks go off and we get into that point, because you just heard Passan say it right there, if they do it soon, we can still play 70-plus games, which isn't great, but it's a hell of a lot better than 48. And if they wait another couple of weeks and get 48, then they've done it. They've brought baseball back, but they brought it back in the worst possible form. So it needs to be sooner than later. All right, let's go to the next
one. I can't have Dusty Baker win his first World Series as a manager playing 50 games. No one's gonna look at that right.
He'll take it. Like you said, like Doug Glanville told us, he'll absolutely take it. The Raiders and Las Vegas are gonna host the 2021 Pro Bowl. Las Vegas will save the Pro Bowl, Key. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
All right.
Yeah, the Pro Bowl is going to be worse in Vegas than it's ever been.
Why?
Man, the players are going to be out every night.
There's places to go in Hawaii.
Yeah, no, but it's not. Hawaii's not like that, though. You usually typically you bring your family. It closes early. You're there with your wife and your kids and your girlfriends. And it's kind of – what you laughing at, Ben? It's kind of
– I think it was the conjunction wife and girlfriends.
Yeah. Raj know the big
Raj,
island travel.
Raj know what that Raj know about that.
wife or girlfriend seems more likely, but maybe it's an and. I don't know.
But it's a little more relaxing, chill. The gambling, the drinking, the clubbing, the partying is way different rolling in at the Pro Bowl, you know, when you ain't got nothing else to do. It's like What it's a Pro Bowl. What they gonna do to me? I'm at the Pro Bowl, so it's gonna be a mess. It ain't gonna be as fun as you think it's gonna be. The game will probably be sloppy, but I still think the NFL should move the game
probably
after the Super Bowl, not before. It's never made sense to me. Before, it's always should be after, and it always should remain in Hawaii or a tropical type destination.
All right, let's go to another NFL topic right here. Here's Diana Rossini saying that there are multiple teams that might be interested in Colin Kaepernick for a workout.
When you talk to different coaches and GMs around the league about possibly bringing him in, look, I can't tell you a team specifically right now that has the plan of bringing Colin in for a workout, but almost I talk to will say, okay, we're not going to do it, but I will tell you there will be plenty of teams plural. So it's really not a matter of if, it's going to probably be when Colin Kaepernick gets that call to come in for a workout with the team come this summer.
There will be a bidding war for Colin Kaepernick. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Oh, shake it.
Oh.
I wouldn't necessarily say a bidding war, but there's certainly going to be a couple teams that will be interested. There's going to be teams out of nowhere that will be interested. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers would be interested now.
Absolutely
what?
No, absolutely. I was just going to say the Chargers is certainly a team I would keep my eye on.
Yeah, a team like the Chargers would be interested. You know, you look at some of these other teams in a bidding war. Nah, not so much, but it'll be a handful of teams. I like the fact that Diana Rossini said, well, team said to her, well, we're not actually interested, but I bet you there's a bunch of other teams that's interested.
That seems to be a common story. That's what Pete Carroll said. You know, we brought him in, but we thought he was going to be, a starter for someone else, so we decided not to do it. And, oh, by the way, somebody called me today to do it. There's a lot of
but if you talk to all 32,
we just don't love him here.
But Travis, if you talk to all 32 teams, all 32 teams might give you that same answer.
That's
now.
What
you're going around in the circle.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It's just not a great idea for us. We're fine. We like our room.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if the Chargers decided to do something like that.
For sure. Let me. I'm trying to think how to ask this. Do you think there'll be teams that bring him in just so they can say they brought him in with absolutely no intention of actually adding him to the team?
No, because that's going to put too much pressure on your franchise. It's going to be too much pressure on your franchise to bring him in just to toy and play around. The toying and playing around with it now, you can't do that right now. You can't do that anymore. Because if you bring him in and don't sign him, you're going to have some problems, and you don't want those problems.
The Dallas Cowboys did just that in their hiring process. They did a little dog and pony show to make you satisfied about the Rooney Rule, and then they kept it moving. Even though all the pressure was on, there's not enough black coaches.
But you knew damn well they wasn't going to hire no Marvin Lewis, man.
That's my point.
Come on, boy, you knew they wasn't going to hire Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis hadn't won anything.
But that's the dog and pony show.
Yeah, but the dog and pony show happened before all of this has happened. It's different now. No one can afford to bring Colin Kaepernick in and then decide, we can't sign him. It'll be too much heat on that particular organization. Imagine if I don't know, the Cincinnati Bengals brought him in and then worked him out but didn't sign him. You know how many people would be so mad and protesting against them?
Okay. I hear what you're saying in that situation, but what if it's a situation like the Chargers, for instance, that they just drafted a guy high in the first round in Justin Herbert. They have a guy, Tyrod Taylor, who's been in their system for a while, and they bring in Kaepernick and say, look, you know what? He's been out of the game for a while. He didn't look as sharp as we were hoping he looked. We're going to go with Herbert. He's obviously not a number three quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, so we're going to move on. We're going to stick with whoever they've got as that third guy on the roster right now.
But also, Travis, the Chargers aren't going to bring him in without knowing that they can sign him. And he's not going to go in without knowing that he's going to be signed. That's the sticky point. He's not going to go to a team that's not going to sign him, and a team ain't going to bring him in if they can't sign him.
Kyrie Irving has multiple plans, including one that makes no sense at all. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.